most busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer to use than alcohol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers in America. And to learn what you can do to help, please contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The show was long and we were just sitting there, and we'd come to play and not just for the ride.
Distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back here to the Audio Stash today. It is Tuesday, November 13th. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us here at Normal. Help us end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org to make your donation or join Normal today. Folks, we have a great show for you here today, our Government at Work special. We're going to speak with Ryan Davidson from the Liberty Lobby of Idaho. He's the one who arranged those ballot initiatives in Haley, Idaho, 3 of 4 passed. We'll talk with Ryan today about those ballot initiatives' successes last week on Election Day. Also in the program today, we're going to speak with Normal's senior policy analyst, Paul Armentano. Paul was in California testifying before an assembly subcommittee on driving under the influence laws in California. They're looking at changing around the detection guidelines out there, and Paul was called as an expert witness to testify. We're going to read some of his testimony today, talk with Paul about that DUID law in California, and also discuss with Paul what it's like to testify before such a powerful state house in the country. All that's here today in your free stash, Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Make sure to tune in every day. Tomorrow we've got Dr. Mitch Earlywine in our regular Wednesday Cannabis Science segment. We're also going to have another free stuff giveaway in the program tomorrow for all you free stuffers out there. So great stuff all week long here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Again, make sure to tune in every day. Let's get to our first segment today in our Government at Work Tuesday special. Let's go out to Idaho. In our Government at Work segment today is the organizer in Idaho who got 3 marijuana-related ballot initiatives passed last week in Haley. Ryan Davidson is with the Liberty Lobby, and he joins us by phone to discuss those positive election results last week. Ryan, welcome here to the program today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Great to speak with you today, Ryan. 3 initiatives passed last week dealing with making marijuana the lowest law enforcement priority in the city, legalizing medical marijuana, and allowing hemp farming. So a big victory there in Haley.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was very pleased, especially because we spent so little money on the campaign. Really have to rely on non-traditional means to get the message out in this political season, such as email and phone and getting stories placed in the newspapers. So at a time, I was worried that we hadn't spent enough money, but I think the results came back, and I was very pleased. Of course, a little disappointed that Tax and Regulate did not pass. However, it failed on a very close margin, I believe 100 votes, and so it's certainly ripe to try again.
And really, this was an interesting case of where voters got a chance on almost all the ways to liberalize cannabis laws on a sort of lever-by-lever basis in an election.
Yeah, you know, when I started this project 3 years ago, we went to Haley Ketchum in Sun Valley, and I basically just tried to do one initiative in each town, which was a Tax and Regulate initiative that also had the lowest police prioritization in there. It was kind of everything but kitchen sink. And, this year I sort of looked, you know, stepped back and said, well, maybe some people don't want to vote for Tax and Regulate. Maybe they're not ready for that. The signature requirement was low enough where I felt I could actually give people a more broad range of choices in the marijuana policy spectrum. And I think it's a gambit that paid off. If I had just done Tax and Regulate, then it probably would have lost. But now we have three initiatives passed that do send a very strong message, just not as strong as I would have liked, but I do think that it's a good indication that sometime in the future Tax and Regulate would be able to pass there.
And Ryan, how will the new ordinances be implemented in Haley?
I haven't heard anything from the city yet. I think everyone's just sort of, keeping their... keeping their cards hidden right now as to what they're going to do. The city could attempt to repeal them, amend them, or they could just try to, work with me and get these initiatives enacted and actually working. So what happens right now, I don't know. The ball's in the city's court, and we're going to wait and see.
Now, Ryan, some of the media was certainly positive about the campaign, and on Election Day, voters seem to really be in tune with these proposals.
Yeah, virtually everyone I had talked to was positive on the issue. We had a couple of big supporters up there, locals who knew, dozens and dozens of people, and were reporting to me that everyone that they talked to were positive about it. So anecdotal evidence certainly suggested that it would pass. Of course, the vote was fairly even. It was, around 54% to 51% for some of the initiatives. So there was a large number of people who didn't vote for these, split fairly evenly 50-50. But I think in such a controversial policy area, such as marijuana legalization, to have 50% of the voters support three initiatives is it's just a great sign.
Now, when people think about marijuana liberalization, they think of perhaps Madison, Wisconsin, or Oregon, or Seattle, definitely California. But, Ryan, is Idaho starting to come around in this area as well?
Boy, the traditional wisdom would say that Idaho would probably be the last state in the union to pass a state initiative to, even allow medical marijuana. And that was sort of the feeling I have as a resident here, but I don't know. I look at the results in Montana and see that they've passed medical marijuana at the state level. I see that they've passed deprioritization in Missoula. And so it's one of those things where I would just love to get it on the statewide ballot to see what happens, because then you would finally know what the people of Idaho want. At this point, I would say that it wouldn't pass, but then, what do I know?
Now, what's marijuana culture like in Idaho? Are there hemp festivals and the like?
It almost seems virtually non-existent. There are no hemp fests or anything like that really happening. No big events. There's certainly little small events here and there, but the state media is usually dismissive of those types of things. This was the first initiative that had ever gotten on the ballot in Idaho dealing with marijuana policy. So, in that respect, I guess a little bit of a trailblazer. So hopefully this will lead to larger discussions. I really did want to get the public talking about this issue, because it's just not talked about that much up here. Hopefully this can kickstart something. But so far, Idaho has been fairly quiet on the marijuana policy issue. A couple of times we've had one state representative from Moscow, Idaho, which is a more liberal college town, introduce a hemp farming bill in state legislature. And it's been there two or three times, and I know that every single time it can't even get out of the committee hearing. So, no, this certainly wasn't an issue that was on the state media's radar, I think, prior to these initiatives on the Haley ballot.
And is there some particular sentiment in Haley that showed this support among voters last week?
Well, when I began to start this process in 2004, I had gotten a grant from MPP, and the purpose was basically to go city by city, pass these initiatives, and eventually build enough support to do a state initiative. I just basically had to pick the cities that I thought would be the most amenable to passing these types of initiatives. And so I chose Ketchum, Haley, and Sun Valley. As you might know, Sun Valley is home of the world-famous Sun Valley Ski Resort, a place where a lot of Hollywood celebrities have second homes. There's a conference every year where all the big media moguls come down to Sun Valley. A lot of millionaires have their second homes up there. And so it was actually the only county who voted for the Democratic presidential nominee the last couple of times. So I just looking at that, I thought that these would probably be the cities in Idaho that would be the most open to voting for these. When we went up there in 2004, all three cities refused to actually process our petitions in violation of law. At that point, MPP yanked our funding, which left us in a fairly precarious position. However, I felt it was an important enough issue, and I sued all three cities on my own dime, representing myself. We actually lost all the initial lawsuits. However, I appealed them all. I won a decision against Sun Valley in the Supreme Court of Idaho, and that actually created a huge new precedent, which said that anyone in Idaho can put whatever they want on the municipal ballot, and the city cannot sue you or keep it off the ballot. Questions about an initiative's legality will not be decided until after it's enacted. Then I won a injunction from the federal court against the city of Haley because they were the only one that had a residency requirement for petition circulators. And that happened just in September. So the election date was quickly approaching. And I kind of lucked out because Haley had a very low signature requirement this year because of a low turnout at the last election. And I was incredibly lucky that I only needed 17 signatures to get it on the ballot. So we raced back to Haley to take advantage of that. I guess my instincts were right, and the voters did agree with us that, you know, the marijuana laws need to change.
And Ryan, you mentioned the upcoming effort, so it seems there's a bright future for cannabis reform there in Idaho.
I certainly see Blaine County, you know, as the starting point for this, and we definitely have eyes on going back into Ketchum now that we have taken advantage of the Supreme Court's generosity in letting the voters be able to do this. And I think there's even more support in the ski town of Ketchum than Haley for tax and regulate. I think it actually would pass there. And so we're looking at either bringing the tax and regulate back to Haley for a second time or going into Ketchum to try it there or possibly doing both. You know, it really depends on whether or not people in Idaho, people in Blaine County want to support this and want to, you know, support the Liberty Lobby and get involved and give donations and that type of thing because, campaigns are very expensive and the Liberty Lobby has, you know, sunk everything that they had into the Supreme Court battle and this current campaign. So it's one of those things where if the people want to support it, I believe it would be very successful.
Well, Ryan, this has been a great conversation here today. I really appreciate you taking time to join us, and a big congratulations go out to you for this victory in Haley.
Oh, thank you very much. Thanks for having me on. And, if anyone would like to check out our website, it's IdahoLibertyLobby.org. And like most great nonprofit websites, it hasn't been updated in a very long time. But it's got our contact info on there if anyone would like to get hold of us.
Many thanks again, Ryan. Ryan Davidson is with the Liberty Lobby of Idaho. We have links to them right up on our website today at normalaudiostash.com. Stay tuned. We're going to speak with Normal's senior policy analyst, Paul Armentano, coming up next.
You're listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
I'm holding the post, and I'm running for freedom. No political road, no, just a hunch of a feeling. Too old is the war, too young our redemption. Too sorry the state of the world, and it's too sorry to mention. Where there were those that would stand up and count themselves in for the whole. Now only rivers of money are washed by the hands that fight to own more. I'm nobody's choice, and I'm nobody's monkey, but I have a voice, and I know you don't want me. I'll say what I will, and I'll sing with conviction. There's a flag on the hill, peace wins the election. Where there were those that would stand up and count themselves in for the whole. Now only rivers of money are washed by the hands that fight to own more.
You're listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
Senior policy analyst Paul Armentano has authored hundreds of articles which have been published really around the country and around the world in hundreds and hundreds of newspapers and online publications. He also gets called to be an expert witness in testimony before state houses, and Paul's done this frequently. He was out in California this week testifying before an assembly subcommittee dealing with new, well, proposed new driving under the influence detection guidelines. Some of Paul's testimony, and we want to read some of this before we speak to him on the phone here. Here's some of Paul's testimony in dealing with this law. Under current state law, it is, quote, unlawful for any person who is under the influence of any drug to drive a vehicle, close quote. This is a multidisciplinary standard that focuses on the motorist's observed behavior and rightly punishes those drivers who are determined to have been impaired by their use of illicit drugs. By contrast, Assembly Bill 1215, under strict interpretation, could potentially punish scores of drivers who are not intoxicated. This is because the law calls for criminally sanctioning motorists based not on their driving behavior, but rather whether or not they have trace levels of non-psychoactive drug metabolites in their blood and urine. Unfortunately, as currently written, AB 1215 would treat sober drivers as impaired and criminally punish them for their previous non-driving related activities. To do so is illogical. The purpose of our state's traffic safety laws is to target and punish those drivers whose on-road actions threaten the safety and security of others. These laws should not be misused to enforce unrelated laws prohibiting the use of certain controlled substances in the privacy of one's home. Again, this is Paul Armentano's testimony before a California Assembly subcommittee on proposed new driving under the influence guidelines. Here's one more paragraph from that testimony, and then we're going to get to our interview with Paul. There exists no evidence that the passage of these strict zero tolerance and or per se laws are actually having any tangible effect in reducing the number of drug drivers from the roadways. This is because, in most cases, those who violate our state's drug driving laws are habitual offenders whose actions are undeterred by the passage of strict criminal sanctions. In fact, the only published study to date to assess the impact of strict zero-tolerance per se DUID legislation reports, quote, "The enactment of zero concentration limits have done nothing to reduce DUID or deter the typical offender because recidivism is high in this population of individuals." Again, that's testimony Paul Armentano gave before the California State Assembly. It was a subcommittee looking at proposed new guidelines for driving under the influence. And again, Paul is often called as an expert to testify before state legislators, and he was performing some of those public service duties last week. Paul, welcome back here to Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
So, Paul, you were out at the California State House testifying before the subcommittee, and it's considering tougher policies regarding driving under the influence of drugs, some of which would change the drug detection guidelines and thresholds for when a DUID charge is instituted. So tell us about what they're proposing here.
The law that's being proposed in California is what is colloquially known as a per se law. Now, most people are very familiar with per se laws as they pertain to drunk driving. In every state in California, if a person operates a motor vehicle and they have a blood alcohol level above 0.08, they are categorized as a drunk driver, and they have violated the law. Now, that said, individuals who operate a motor vehicle and show signs of impairment under the influence of alcohol but are actually under the .08, they can still be charged with drunk driving, but the state has a higher burden of proof to make the case that those people are impaired. Now, what these individuals in the California legislature are trying to do is to set similar per se standards to different types of drugs so that individuals that are caught operating a motor vehicle, if they test positive for the presence of these drugs, they are considered by the state per se to be impaired, similar to how one today would be considered per se to be drunk if they tested above 0.08. The problem here is that there is no evidence correlating drug impairment standards to set levels of drugs in the blood or trace levels of inactive drug metabolites in the urine. So essentially what the legislature is proposing is to establish a new driving-related crime that is actually divorced from impairment. The concern here is that we would be using the traffic safety laws to punish people and convict them for drugged driving, but that these people would in fact be sober drivers. They would simply be drivers who happen to have trace levels of drugs in their system due to drug use that could have taken place days or weeks previously.
And who was there testifying on behalf of this new law?
In large part, law enforcement and district attorneys and prosecutors are pushing for these laws. They are pushing for these laws because under most state drug driving laws, the prosecution has to establish three criteria. They have to show that an individual was in fact driving. They then have to show that the person that was operating the motor vehicle recently used an illicit substance. And then the third thing they have to show is that the driver was impaired due to the recent use of an illicit substance. What they wish to do is actually eliminate that third criterion and simply be able to convict somebody for drug driving if they can show they were in fact A, driving, and B, had used an illicit substance. They have argued that in fact it is too difficult for them to go in the court and establish that a person was actually impaired by their use of drugs. So they want to take impairment out of the equation and essentially misuse the traffic safety laws to convict people based solely on their status as an illicit drug user.
And Paul, in this new change of policy, one thing that is missing is anything regarding cannabis, and that was on purpose. But there is talk of adding cannabis to this new set of DUID laws later.
In this particular bill, no, the sponsor did not include cannabis. That is not because the sponsor in this case believes that individuals who use marijuana, whether it's recreationally or for medical purposes, should be exempt from the law, but I think he was acknowledging a political reality that this law, as introduced, is already controversial, and it would simply be made more controversial if he was to include cannabis into the mix. It would clearly have the possibility of adversely affecting a much larger population in California if it included cannabis. So for those reasons, he removed marijuana from the bill. But under this bill, when it was drafted initially, it was set to include marijuana. And in fact, it was also set to be a zero tolerance per se law. What that would mean is that a driver who had any measurable level of an illicit drug or inactive drug metabolite would then be considered under the statute to be guilty of drug driving. Whether or not there was any demonstrable evidence of impairment beyond the toxicology test.
You mentioned the political backlash that really has cannabis out of the equation for now, but if they do pass the law and later try and add cannabis, won't there again be that public outcry and political backlash?
Well, you know, for political expediency's sake, the sponsor may believe that the best approach is to pass a law and then amend it later. We've seen in some states that have passed these type of laws, naturally most states have included marijuana, but some states have in fact excluded marijuana. Virginia, for instance, now has a law on the books that is strikingly similar to this California proposal. The Virginia law struck cannabis from the law because there were many individuals, myself included, who testified on the multitude of reasons why marijuana should not be considered part of the law. And although we weren't able to strike the law entirely, we were at least able to remove marijuana from the list of scheduled drugs that would be included under the law. Now, the Virginia legislature, 2 years later, went back and tried to amend that law by adding cannabis, but they were unable to. But certainly there is a precedent for passing this sort of a law, excluding cannabis, and then trying to have the legislature go back and add it in later. I do not know if that's the intent of the sponsor. I was pleased that during this hearing, he, on two separate occasions, did make it clear that he was not predominantly concerned about marijuana, and his primary concern was targeting drivers who may have used cocaine, heroin, PCP, and methamphetamine. That said, many of the witnesses who testified in favor of this bill did recommend that the sponsor add cannabis to the bill, but he did seem to be hesitant to do so, and I would take that as a positive.
Now, Paul, tell us about this experience of going into the state legislature, especially the one in California, and making this type of testimonial appearance. What's the setting like, and what is that experience like?
You have to have a thick skin. You know, that's the first thing I would say. Oftentimes, there are going to be a majority of legislators who are going to not attack the weight of your beliefs, but more likely are simply going to make ad hominem attacks because they don't feel comfortable actually attacking your testimony. And you see that quite a bit, and you have to get used to it. Oftentimes when you're testifying after law enforcement, you are following individuals who, without any science or factual basis, have given the committees very heartfelt stories about tragedies that they've seen in their, you know, while working as a police officer. And they will say things like, if this bill can save even one child, then it's worth it. They really do pull at the heartstrings. And then you have to follow that, and you have to try to balance that sort of emotional rhetoric with science and with facts, and also make the committee aware that, look, there's more victims in this world than simply people who may be adversely affected by the misuse of certain drugs. In fact, we believe there's far more victims affected by the misuse of the drug policies and the drug prohibition. And you have to try to make the members of the committee see that, but it's not an easy task.
And some of those attacks are pretty personal, I assume, given this is politics.
Sure, almost all the time. One story that comes quickly to mind out of this most recent committee hearing just last week was the fact that the head of the California Narcotics Officers Association, as soon as I finished testifying, very sarcastically referred to me as Joe McCarthy, and I believe that analogy was made by him because in his mind I had the audacity to actually bring scientific studies with me to back up my testimony. And when I went ahead and quoted from these studies, I made a point to hold the study up before the committee and make it clear to them that I had copies available of these for all the members of the committee. In the mind of my opponent, apparently doing so made me much similar to Joe McCarthy, who, as many listeners know, that's not a comparison one would draw favorably. Clearly, it was meant as an insult, and it was something that was meant, I assume, to try and rattle my future testimony.
And Paul, what about Normal? Are legislators, especially in California, familiar with the name and the message?
Well, it's certainly well known. It won't always receive the most favorable response from legislators, but the members of the California Assembly in particular are quite well aware of who Normal is, what it represents, and what our positions are. In fact, the sponsor of this bill was very familiar with Normal. He was quite familiar with me, and in fact, he quoted from Normal's principles of responsible use during this hearing, making it clear that Normal, as an organization, takes a position that individuals should not operate a motor vehicle after having smoked cannabis. I'm not quite sure why he made that point, because it seemed to undermine his own argument and add credibility to Normal, and I don't think that was his intention. But in fact, he did announce to the committee that Normal did have a policy that did not encourage marijuana smokers to go out and drive shortly after smoking. And I actually thought it was good that a California Assembly member that's proposing language regarding drug driving would be aware that Normal takes that stance.
That's very interesting. You know, that set of principles for responsible use published by Normal, a lot of folks are somewhat surprised by some of those principles, but it's always been a cornerstone of Normal's mission to really maintain that level of honesty and good science when discussing marijuana.
Well, I certainly think so. And, you know, here again, I think it is a stance that is very much in accordance with the science. While an individual who uses marijuana may not be, or while someone who smokes marijuana may be a safer driver under the influence of marijuana as compared to a driver under the influence of alcohol, it does not make them a safe driver overall. And the science backs that up, and I think it is simply a stance that is in accordance with one taking personal responsibility. And if we're going to change these laws and if we're going to treat marijuana similar in a manner to the way we regulate alcohol and tobacco, we as a community need to take that stance.
And Paul, where do you think this new legislation in California is headed? Are they going to pass it, do you think?
My sense is that they will revisit this bill. It won't go away. I was told that the committee may hold a second hearing on this bill as soon as January. I would not be surprised to see that happen. The X factor in all this is that the federal government is expected imminently to make public their own recommendations for what they would consider to be an ideal state law addressing this issue of drug driving. And it's a possibility that the federal government may come out and recommend these sort of onerous zero tolerance per se laws that have passed now in a number of states. And I do think that many states, that even states like California that are now debating this issue, are most likely going to hold off on passing any legislation until they see what the feds recommend. Because it's not just that the federal government can recommend guidelines. I fully expect that after the federal government comes out with a recommendation, they are going to try and impose that recommendation on the states by threatening them with a loss of highway funding if they do not adopt the federal government's guidelines. And I think most legislators read this similarly, and they're probably not going to act until the federal government does, which for the short term might be a good thing. In the long term, this is a battle that we're going to have to fight in, you know, for many years down the road, and we're really going to have to, you know, increase our efforts when and if the federal government comes out with those recommendations, particularly if they're, you know, exceptionally poor recommendations. And unfortunately, I have a feeling that they're going to be.
Righto. Well, Paul, this has been a great conversation, as always. Many thanks for being the one with the thick skin out there and making these appearances in front of state legislators like you just did there in California. And many thanks for joining us here to talk about it today.
No problem, Chris. Good to be here.
Thank you again, Paul. Paul Armentano is Normal's Senior Policy Analyst. You can read his publications and writings up at normal.org. He's the author of Emerging Clinical Applications for Cannabis and Cannabinoids, and Paul helps us very frequently here with programs on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. You can contact him with questions at paul@normal.org. Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. Podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.